Dark Side of the Ring this week stepped into the world of deathmatch wrestling. This was the episode on Nick Gage, who is a legendary figure in the deathmatch wrestling world. I knew of Nick Gage coming into this. I didn't know a whole lot about him. Deathmatch wrestling, not my thing. But I wanted to keep an open mind coming into the episode. I wasn't not going to watch it. I know some people probably just skipped over this one. But I wanted to come into this with an open mind and, you know, learn a little bit more about who this guy is and what makes him tick. And you do come away from this knowing more about him, his upbringing, his family, and kind of what led him to where he is today. Obviously, he's been down in the ditch. He's seen the lowest of lows. He's, you know, an addict. He's been in prison. So he's been through the whole gamut of stuff to get to where he is today. And I thought that it was an interesting character study in some ways, although I still don't have a real answer to the question of why would somebody willingly put themselves through the kind of abuse that some of these guys do. Now, you can point to somebody like Mick Foley. Mick Foley comes from that same world. Mick Foley has done plenty of death matches in his day. Mick Foley would abuse his body in ways that you're not supposed to. You're not supposed to take the kind of punishment that Mick Foley has put himself through over the years. And yet Mick Foley has gone on to become a big star. He's well-liked by a lot of people. Is it because he went mainstream? Is it because... who knows? Yeah, Mick Foley has been around for ages. And Mick Foley has, you know, respect from a lot of people. So there are types of hardcore wrestling that I enjoy. When it comes to like the ultra-violent stuff and the light tubes and some of the really wacky shit that they do, you know, coming into this, I didn't understand it. Coming out of this, I still don't get it. To each their own. If you're a fan of it, that's fine. Clearly, there's an audience for it. They interviewed Jon Moxley for the special. Moxley has been friends with Gage for a long time. He's been in the ring with Gage before. In fact, I saw that there was, I think, a GCW show just the other night, where Moxley showed up after Gage's match. Looks like they're building to something between the two of them. This is not the first time this year that these two have wound up in the ring together. So obviously they're fairly close. And Moxley told a story early in the episode about one of their, I don't know if it was their first match or one of their first matches together, where Gage took a pizza cutter. And he took it to his forehead and cut him open with it. And yeah, it didn't feel too good, but Moxley's thinking, okay, the fans are into it. This is going well. Then, of course, he takes the pizza cutter to Moxley's mouth and slices him open. And Moxley thought he cut his tongue out, feeling around, realizes his tongue is still in there. He goes, Gage just got all wound up and all wrapped up in the enthusiasm of the crowd, and he kind of knew what was about to happen, but I guess he felt he couldn't do anything to stop it, and slice, just like that. They talk about the Tournament of Death, which is held every year on this bit of farmland up in Delaware. Moxley calls it the Woodstock for pro wrestling death matches. They basically just needed a place to be able to put this tournament on without the cops shutting them down. I guess it's kind of like that gathering of the Juggalos. I don't know if that still happens or not. I know where they used to do that was really deep out there. And I think that was one of the reasons they did it there, is because they wanted to try to avoid the cops coming in and shutting them down. But the finals to crown a champion, and this is going back many years, was a match between Nick Gage and a German import by the name of Thumbtack Jack. Now, if I were in a match, or told that I was going to be in a match with a guy that called himself Thumbtack Jack, I don't know that I would take that booking. But of course, Nick Gage, this is what he does. This is what he lives for. And clearly, he's a lot tougher than I am. So, who am I to doubt the great Nick Gage? He goes in there with Thumbtack Jack. And Brett Lauderdale is the owner of GCW. He's the owner of Game Changer Wrestling, excuse me. He has a whole long history with Nick Gage. He was there for that match in the Tournament of Death. He was a referee at the time. They have footage of all of this. And In the middle of the match, Gage is tossed into the light tubes. There are light tubes surrounding the ring. He gets thrown into the light tubes, falls out of the ring, out to the, you know, to the ground. And I guess he just hit it in just the right spot, or just the wrong spot, depending on how you look at it. I think he sliced into an artery. Blood is just pouring out of his, I don't think it was his chest, but it's almost like the side, like where his ribs are. It's really bad. And you know it's really bad because even Nick Gage, he walks off. You know, he didn't just go back into the ring to continue the match. He knew that something, he looked down and he knew right away that he was very seriously injured. They have footage of all of this. Blood is pouring out of his body. He's telling the medics, just tape me up and let me go back in the ring. And they won't, you know, allow him to get back in the ring. But they're having trouble getting an ambulance onto the property. So they show a helicopter landing on the property instead. They had to airlift him to the hospital. And apparently that's the last thing he remembers, is being loaded up into this chopper. When he was in the helicopter, he flatlined for about 7 minutes. It took them that long to bring him back to life. And Moxley says, you know, the tournament of death is just supposed to be a turn of phrase. You're not actually supposed to die. But for a few minutes there, Nick Gage did die during the tournament of death. So at this point, they kind of took us back to his childhood in New Jersey. He was raised by a single mom. And they talked about how his mother meant everything to, and clearly listening to him talk about his mother, she was very important to him in his life. His mom had breast cancer. They did the cancer walks every year. So, you know, when I talk about this being a character study and me being more interested in knowing more about the guy himself and kind of where he's from and what led him to this point. See, I look at that and that's something that unfortunately I can relate to. Listening to him talk about his mother and the breast cancer and all that stuff. So I can relate to that. They introduced us to his girlfriend of 20 years. They told us about his brother Chris, who used to wrestle under the name Justice Payne. Talked about the matches that he and his brother would have. As kids, what influenced them were the Japanese death matches. And they had footage of the Cactus Jack Terry Funk exploding barbed wire death match. The C4... explosions going off in the ring. And it was after watching that stuff that he and his brother knew exactly what they wanted to do with their lives. They said, that's for us. That's where we need to be. So they used to watch ECW back in the day, and eventually they wound up in CZW. His girlfriend talked about the one match where he ended up setting himself on fire, which he had told her he wasn't going to do, and then he did. So they show us, he's talking about stop, drop, and roll. Well, to stop, drop, and roll would imply that you actually stop, you drop down to the ground, and you roll around. That's not exactly what Nick Gage did. I don't know what he was doing, but whatever he was doing was not stopping or dropping or rolling. Although he did say that shit doesn't work. Yeah, that shit doesn't work when you don't do it the right way. If you do it the right way, it would work. He says it sucked, but he finished the match. Anything like that. You know, it's funny. I just saw there was a video going around this weekend on Twitter. I don't know what show it was from. Some independent show. Some guy in a mask is laying outside the ring, and the other wrestler comes over, and he lights his crotch on fire. So now the guy's crotch is just, it just bursts into flames. He's trying to put the flames out, but he can't. And the flames are getting more and more intense. And somebody in the audience is just filming this on their phone. And you can hear some guy, I don't know if it was the person who was filming or not, but some guy in the background, put him out, put him out, put him out. And the wrestler starts to panic and he's standing up and he is almost engulfed in flames. And he runs into the crowd of all the places to run into when you're on fire. Not that there was a big crowd to begin with. He set himself on fire here for fucking 20 people. He runs into the audience. You can hear screaming in the background once he's off camera. Not a single fire extinguisher in the building. You know you're going to do a spot like this, and the people running the show or the people working the show, nobody there expects that, hey, we might have to use this fire extinguisher. We should have one on hand. Does nobody think of these things? Please, If you insist on using fire, which you shouldn't be doing anyway, but if you insist on using fire in a spot like that where you're going to set another human being on fire, have a fucking fire extinguisher, at least one, sitting somewhere in the vicinity. I know some of these independent promotions can't afford to have an ambulance on standby, but at least have a fire extinguisher. It doesn't cost a whole lot. You can go to Home Depot, you can go to Lowe's and buy yourself a fire extinguisher. Some of these people, I swear to God, they have no brains. So I just got done watching that on Twitter, and here in this special, we see Nick Gage, he's on fire. He's stopped, drop, and roll. Apparently that didn't work for him, and they showed afterwards the aftermath where he's got burns all over his body. It goes into then the problems that he had with painkillers. And this is where I just kind of look at this and I go to myself, on the one hand, I sympathize with anybody who's dealing with any kind of pain. It is not fun. Any kind of pain, you know, I don't wish that on anybody, and that's a horrible thing. But when you get into deathmatch wrestling and you're doing the kind of things that people like Nick Gage are doing, you're setting yourself on fire, you're taking the kind of ridiculous punishment that you're taking. I mean, isn't it fairly obvious where this is going to lead? So it goes into this whole thing about his addiction to painkillers. I mean, big surprise there. And when he couldn't find Oxycontin and he couldn't find Percocet, he would try to get heroin off the street and he became a big drug addict. He was blowing all of his income on heroin. That pretty much consumed him and became his life. They have footage of a match that he and his brother had in CZW. Nick was so out of it. His brother just hauls off and slaps the shit right out of him, trying to kind of snap him out of it and wake him up. And Chris knows at this point, okay, Nick's in no condition to be in this match. And he hits his finish and ends the match quickly and he walks to the back. And I don't believe they ever spoke again after that. Certainly not for many years, but I don't believe that they ever spoke again after that night. Then after that, their mother died. So you take all of these things in combination, right? He's got a bad drug problem. His mother has passed away, who he's very close with. His brother, you know, he and his brother are not on speaking terms anymore. His life is just spiraling out of control. He was living with his girlfriend and her mother. They got kicked out of the house. He said, we needed money. It's the middle of the winter. It's cold outside. We're freezing. We have no money. One night he walks by a bank, ends up robbing the bank. He holds up the bank teller. Moxley says he got a phone call to check his email. He checks his email and there's a photo from a security camera, and they showed us the photo of somebody robbing the bank who clearly looks like Nick Gage. And even Moxley says it was clear as day, that's Nick Gage. Gage says he didn't even know the camera was there. He goes, I looked right into that bitch. Didn't even know it was there. I didn't even have a mask on. And Moxley points out the fact that Gage, you know, for a lot of his matches, wears a mask like a train robber, you know, with the bandana over the face. Anytime he comes to the ring, and yet here, the one time he doesn't wear a mask is the one time he robs a bank. He tells his girlfriend, look, we got to get out of here. We got to go to Atlantic City. And his only goal was to spend all of the money that he just stole. He knows he's going to prison. They have him dead to rights. So his only goal is to at least have some fun before he turns himself in. Eventually, he does turn himself in. He gets sentenced to 5 years, which most of which he served. I think it was about 4.5 years before they let him out. But while he was in prison, he started getting fan mail, like in bulk. And it was at that point that he realized the impact that he was having on people. Really, up to that point, he didn't have any concept of how many fans out there he really had. And so his goal at that point became, you know, put down the cheeseburgers, start working out, change my body, come back, bring deathmatch wrestling to a new height. They had footage of him the day he got released from prison. Lauderdale has this idea with GCW to come up with this Nick Gage Invitational Deathmatch Tournament. And that's what he's planning for Nick's big return. One day he gets a phone call telling him they took Nick. So what happened is he was doing okay for a while, but he fell into bad habits. And he got busted for using somebody else's urine during a drug test. Brett says, well, that was part of it. Nick also may have been using some other device, whatever that means. But he was pissed. Here he was building this tournament around Nick Gage, and now he went and got himself arrested again. And he ended up going back to prison for 2 more years. So in the time that he's in prison, GCW really becomes, you know, the place for death matches. When he gets out, Brett gives him another chance. This is where he talks about his MDK gang, which I think is the murder, death, kill gang is what he calls it. MDK, he's got MDK on his shirt. And Lauderdale comes up with this crazy idea to have a death match at a GCW event between Nick Gage and David Arquette, this is probably during the period where Arquette was filming his documentary. He was getting back into wrestling, and Arquette was interviewed for this. He sat down for the episode, and I love how he introduces himself with the biggest shit-eating grin on his face as former WCW champion David Arquette. He goes, "You can't take that away from me." And they actually had footage here of Arquette winning the WCW world title on Thunder many years ago. Arquette talked about how the fans absolutely hated it. So what he was trying to do was earn their respect. He was trying to earn their respect. He was asked if he would wrestle Nick Gage. He had no idea who Nick Gage was. He looked him up. He thought, hey, you know what? This will be great. This is a great way to earn people's respect. I'll do a death match. What better way for me to earn the respect of wrestling fans who hate me than by stepping in the ring and taking some punishment and doing my first death match? He invited Gage and I think Lauderdale out for a fancy dinner at a steakhouse out in LA. Talk about the match. And he's all into it. He's all into the idea of doing it and everything. He goes, he had one condition. He had one rule, which is that Gage does not cut him. Do not cut me. That was his only rule. And Gage said, all right. He goes, I'm not going to go soft on you, though. But Arquette was on board. So they have footage of all of this. I remember talking about this on the podcast at the time because it was the craziest thing to watch all of this unfold. Gage grabs a pizza cutter. So here we go, right back to the Moxley match. He's got the pizza cutter. And he tells Arquette, you're not going to feel a thing. Cuts him open. Right on his head. And then he does the same thing he did to Moxley. Puts it in his mouth. He slices him. And Arquette's talking about the fact that at that point, you know, the trust is gone. You have to have trust in your opponent. I just got done talking about this with New Jack. New Jack's legacy is very complicated because New Jack, as entertaining as he could be, there were a lot of bad things that New Jack would do when he was in the ring with certain people. Whether he didn't like him or he had a reason not to like him, that's not even the point. When you get in the ring with somebody, you're giving your body to them. You're trusting them with your body. Now, if you talk in advance, hey, listen, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. All right, fine. Then the person knows what to expect. But if the person doesn't know what to expect, or if the person says, look, one thing, don't do this. Don't do this one thing to me. And they go in the ring and they do that one thing, the trust is gone. Because you've violated the one thing that, you know, when you get in the ring with somebody, you're at least hoping, hey, this guy's going to take care of me. So he wasn't very happy about that. He's getting very pissed off. And he breaks a light tube over Arquette's head. He's trying to cut him with it. And you can see in the footage, you know, Arquette is trying to fight back. He's getting very upset. He ends up getting a piece or a shard of a light tube jammed in the side of his neck, or it sliced the side of his neck. There was concern that maybe he sliced his jugular. I mean, he grabbed his neck, he put his hand on his neck right away. And before they cut to commercial, they have Gage going, shit, did I just kill David Arquette? So Arquette is, you know, blood is gushing out of his neck. He throws a chair at Gage. Gage could have gone medieval on him at that point, but, you know, to his credit, he wanted to put an end to this as quickly as possible. He gave Arquette a judo throw, forced him, his shoulders down on the mat, pinned him. And Gage said, look, he did good. until he started being a little crybaby about it. He says he ran into Luke Perry's car, and I haven't heard from him since. Apparently the two haven't spoken. And Arquette admits, he goes, look, I was in over my head. I really had no business being in there. He was definitely in over his head. But it goes back to the trust issue. He had one condition for this guy. Don't cut me. And Gage went and cut him anyway. And that doesn't make you cool. That doesn't make you tough. But yeah, of course, David Arquette in a death match. I mean, he's a fucking idiot for thinking that would be a good idea. Some people are cut out for that. David Arquette had no business being in that match in the first place. And if he thinks that's what he has to do to earn the respect of wrestling fans, then you know what? Fuck wrestling fans. You don't need to do that. But when the match happens, it turns Gage into an even bigger star. And then at that point, the special, you know, pivots over to his brother. Unfortunately, his brother committed suicide, jumped off the Walt Whitman Bridge in Philadelphia. It was weird because the two of them kind of changed roles, right? Nick was always the one who was getting into trouble. He had a bad drug problem. He robbed a bank. He went to prison. His brother didn't even visit him in prison the whole time he was in there because he was ashamed of him. And as Nick got out and was trying to get his life together, his brother got into some shit that he shouldn't have been involved in. And apparently the cops were, you know, after him because he stole a car. And as they're chasing after him on this bridge, he just went and jumped right off. Jumped off the bridge to his death. And what's really messed up about it, you know, he talks about the fact that every time he leaves his house, when Nick Gage walks out his front door, the first thing he sees off in the distance is that bridge. So to this day, every time he walks out of his house, he sees the bridge that his brother jumped off of to his death. That's got to be rough. And the producer asks Brett Lauderdale, do you think that Gage's story is one of redemption? And Lauderdale says, well, I mean, as of this moment, I guess it would be, but his story's not over yet. Nobody really knows how his story is going to end. And Gage admits, he goes, you know I'm going to die young. He goes, I don't have a death wish, but I know I'm going to die sooner rather than later. And Jon Moxley finishes things off with an interesting quote that I saw some people online twisting into a bit of a pretzel. He says, Vince McMahon would kill to have one person on his roster that has the connection with the audience the way that Nick Gage does. He would kill to have a Nick Gage in his company who can connect with the audience the way that he does. And of course, people latched onto that quote. Moxley's got to be on drugs, insinuating that Vince McMahon would kill to have someone like Nick Gage. I understand what Moxley is saying, even though it does kind of, on the surface, it sounds completely ridiculous. Reality is, though, Gage does have a connection to his fan base. He's got a lot of very passionate fans out there who love the guy, who want to see him succeed, who wrote him fan mail in prison, and, you know, they have the MDK gear on that they wear, and they make sure they watch all of his matches. How many people are we talking about? I don't know. Are we talking hundreds? Are we talking a few thousand? I don't know what the size is of the Nick Gage fan base, but the people who love him really love him. And they're really passionate about him. And what he's saying is, Vince McMahon wishes that he had somebody right now on his roster who can inspire people the way that Nick Gage does, to follow everything he does and watch every match that he's in and buy a ticket to every show that he's on and buy a piece of every piece of merch that comes out for him. Which is true. Vince McMahon would love to have somebody like a Daniel Bryan, who was like that for him at one point, or a Becky Lynch for the period of time that she was really hot in the company, or a Steve Austin back in the day. That's what he's saying. He's not saying that Vince McMahon would kill to have Nick Gage on his roster. First of all, Vince McMahon has no fucking idea who Nick Gage even is. That's number one. Number two, Vince McMahon wants nothing to do with Nick Gage. I can assure you, I have not even spoken to Vince McMahon, and I will tell you right now that Vince McMahon would want nothing to do with Nick Gage. That is not what Jon Moxley was saying. I understand the point that he was making. And that's kind of what I was left with at the end of the episode. Is that for all the shit that this guy has gone through, he does seem to have gotten himself to a place where he's in a better place. He is happy. Happier, certainly, than he was. And he's got a very loyal, very dedicated fan base. But when this was over, my mind didn't change as far as the kind of ultra-violent deathmatch stuff that he does. I don't get it. I don't think I ever will get it. It's not my thing. But clearly there are a lot of people who are into it. He is sort of their king. He's the one that they regard as kind of this big legend in that space. I guess you could say what Mick Foley and guys like that would have been 20 years ago in the deathmatch world, or Onita or somebody like that. To a lot of people, that's who Nick Gage is. He's carved out his niche for him. Oh, literally, in some cases, carved out his niche for himself. And he is very well regarded in the deathmatch world. But I don't know that I will ever understand what possesses somebody to take the kind of abuse that he and a lot of these guys do. And I've heard people say that some of the best storytelling comes from deathmatch wrestling. You know, when I watched for the history segment last week, I had watched the Onita Terry Funk exploding deathmatch from 94, I think it was, which was the inspiration for the Moxley Kenny Omega match at Revolution this year. And you could definitely see elements of storytelling in that match and the selling, you know, Terry Funk selling in that match. And then Onita at the very end, when the bombs are about to go off, he kind of looks back and sees Funk laying there in the ring, his mentor, the man who trained him, and he, you know, dives into the ring and tries to pull him out, and there's 4 seconds left and he covers him. And yeah, absolutely, there's elements of storytelling to it, but I just, some of the really insanely stupid shit that I see, there's just no explanation for it. It defies all logic. And then some of these guys will turn around and wonder why they're hooked up on pain pills for the rest of their life. Gee, I wonder. Not my thing, but at least I know more about Nick Gage now than I did coming in. But this is less a story about pro wrestling and more a story about addiction. And in this case, the addict is Nick Gage, somebody who is addicted to not only the thrill of the crowd, but pain, has been addicted to drugs. He's been battling various vices and addictions his whole life, and that really is what this episode was about.